This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. We appreciate you being with us on this fine Thursday. Coming your way this morning, we are stunned to a news in 20 minutes. And in 40 minutes, Shaq, with a wonderful gesture for a random person he met at a jeweler. Next hour, 1 hour from now, Pete Prisco, CBS Sports, senior NFL columnist on the NFL draft. He has some bold claims about how the Jaguars will look after drafting Trevor Lawrence. And in an hour and 20 minutes, The Miz is going to join us ahead of WrestleMania. The Miz is going to drop on by next hour as well. I wanted to start, though, this hour talking about Tiger Woods, because the L.A. Sheriff's Office released their details and their conclusion of the wreck yesterday. And I want this very clear. I am happy, very happy, that Tiger Woods was not injured more seriously, and even more happy that he did not injure somebody else more seriously. The fact that he's able to survive this wreck, even if he is not able to play golf ever again, even if he's no longer ever able to compete on the PGA Tour again, even if this did end his competitive golfing career, it is an enormous, enormous stroke of luck that Tiger did not kill himself or injure or kill others. That's the most important thing here, no matter what. But the LA Sheriff's Office and the Tiger camp have been incredibly vague about most of this since it began. And yesterday did not really put too much more into the hopper of details on how this crash happened. What the LA Sheriff's Office did was, when they found Tiger wrecked, they did not sense any impairment, drugs or alcohol. They thought that he was relatively lucid for having just been in a car crash and deemed it unnecessary to have him take any tests. No toxicology reports, no walk a straight line, no let me ask you a bunch of questions. They did not feel like that was important enough. They deemed it no impairment. So we don't know, since that wasn't done at the time, if he was impaired at all. Number two, they did not seek out phone records. They could. They didn't do that in this case. So we don't know if he was making a phone call or texting at that time. If you go to Tiger and ask him, they did, details about what happened, he simply says he doesn't remember. The only thing that he told them was he had a long day the day before. And the only other information they could glean was from the distance in which his car rolled through forensics and studies of velocity and things like this, because his car rolled, hit a tree, and then rolled hundreds of feet away, they knew he was going quite fast. It's a 45. They knew that he was going over that limit because of how far his car was tossed. There was a black box inside of this car, much like planes have, because it's a brand new car, and I guess brand new cars, because they're largely, you know, computerized in many ways, have this black box now. Certainly older cars did not, but you could then get information from that, and they had gleaned from that that at the time of the crash, he was going between 82 and 87 miles an hour. That's what we know, and what they believed, they theorized, was that if you're going 45, if you're going over 80, up to 87, and the black box showed no braking done, that it was acceleration only, that Tiger must have hit the gas to accelerate mistakenly instead of the brake. That was their only conclusion here. And that's it. So, in this instance, I don't have anything against Tiger, but I do feel like I've got a pretty sharp BS meter for having done this for a really long time. And that is studying and researching and analyzing reports and incidents and situations in sports, and this happens to be a sports figure, where you know there's a truth that will never be gotten to, and you've only got your own deduction to get on. And this happens with trades. It happens with stories of locker rooms, relationships between players, coaches and players, drafts, games. This happens in sports all of the time. We have that tip of the iceberg that is visible, and then everything underneath the water that is not. And it has been my conclusion, my belief, that we're not getting the whole story. Now, you can argue we don't deserve the whole story because it's a private matter. And that's fine. I would argue the opposite, which is why I've talked about it on the show. I don't take these things lightly. I think about why I would talk about them. Tiger Woods is one of the most recognizable athletes in the world, and has been for 25 years. So you're talking about a top five most famous, most recognizable athlete in the world. Top five, top 10, maybe top one at some point over the last 25 years. And an incident where he nearly dies and will likely end his golfing career. That's significant. That is significant to talk about. A car crash that ended the playing career of Roy Campanella and left him paralyzed in the 1950s is obviously a story. It's obviously a sports story. A car wreck that kills Malik Sealy. An accident that kills Kobe Bryant, and he wasn't playing basketball anymore, is obviously a sports story. So to argue that this is just a private matter, I think, is disingenuous. And I think it is protective of somebody that you like, and you don't want any more details from it. And when I tweet this out yesterday about what are we missing here on this story, I certainly saw plenty of people that said basically some version of mind your business. Which I found interesting because, again, this is one of the most decorated and greatest golfers ever, and his career is likely over from this crash. So that's significant. That's a sports story. Number two, if you want to say, okay, it's a crash, but you don't need to know why, DA. Why are you poking at this, DA? Why are you suggesting something, DA? I will tell you. The second part of this, and again, I take this very seriously about why I would bring this up on the air, my doubts about the information that we have, is because Tiger Woods has not been a Boy Scout behind the wheel of a car over the course of his life. Tiger Woods is not Mother Teresa. Tiger Woods is not the Dalai Lama. Tiger Woods has had multiple incidents behind the wheel of a car where he was incredibly impaired, putting in danger not only himself, but everybody on the road around him. Tiger Woods was under the influence of medication when he crashed his car into the fire hydrant on the night where his life spilled out into the public eye. And he was also so blotto on pain meds that he pulled over on the side of the road, the side of the highway, and fell asleep on his car, at his car, and was arrested for it. Now, if you don't think that a third incident involving somebody, whether it's Tiger Woods or somebody else, is significant, if they've had two other impairment-related incidents, if you don't think that's important, I would challenge what you then think is important. If I told you we're going to go out on the highway right now and you'll be driving 75 miles an hour next to somebody who has three traffic incidents, two crashes, and one where he's arrested sleeping on the side of the road, you might want that information. You might take that information seriously. You might say, yeah, that's an important piece of information. If I said, would you prefer to know if the person driving next to you has been medded up behind the wheel of a car and has gotten into two major crashes? You'd probably say, yeah, I'd like to know that. For everybody on my timeline that wants to tell me, DA, it's none of your business, why do you care? That is so much about your protection of Tiger Woods because you feel like Tiger's been through enough. Well, that's a you thing. That's not a reality thing. And I think that's what has happened in the golf community. Tiger has become a very sympathetic figure. Tiger went through a lot personally, of which he brought it all upon himself, but he did go through a lot. He lost a lot of integrity. He lost a lot of credibility. He lost a lot of sponsors. He lost a lot of maybe respect at a moment. And has built himself back by being a friend of many young people on the tour. He has become a role model for a lot of people on the tour. And he is still Tiger Woods. When he won the Masters a couple of years ago, it is nothing but a feel-good story for just about everybody. I mean, it would be very rare for you to find somebody that didn't say that's a great moment. So Tiger has now cultivated this whole army of people that are very protective of what he has been through and who he is now. Again, that's not my responsibility. My responsibility here is to look at the information and glean what I can from it, specifically because it is important to know if there is somebody behind the wheel of a car who has been in multiple wrecks, and even if he wasn't under impairment, has been reckless driving that many times, that is notable. That is absolutely notable. If it happens to be one of the greatest athletes ever to live, it is absolutely notable. And if it happened that twice out of the three we know he was under the influence, well, yes, this is absolutely a story. Do I think it's convenient that Tiger says, I forgot everything? Sure. Do I think it's possible he does? Of course. Of course it's possible after a wreck that he forgets everything. Do I think it's convenient? Absolutely. Do I think it's convenient that the authorities did not test him for any impairment? Absolutely. Do I think it's possible he wasn't under the influence? I think it's probable he wasn't under the influence. Do I think it's convenient they did not check his text records? Yes. Do I think it was necessary? No. Because nobody was injured here. There was no property damage to anybody but his own car. But do I think it's convenient? Of course. And do I think the explanation that he accelerated during the crash instead of braking is convenient? I don't think it's convenient. I think it's damn near impossible. You know what I think happened? I don't think Tiger Woods was under impairment at 7:30 in the morning going to a golf TV shoot with Drew Brees and Justin Herbert. No way. Not for a minute do I think that Tiger Woods is stupid enough to arrive at a television shoot under a cloud of pain meds. Nor do I think he wakes up at 7:30 in the morning still drunk from the night before getting ready to go to a golf TV event. I don't think he was under the impairment at all. Do I think it's possible he doesn't remember what happened? Sure, it's possible. I think he was texting. I think he was texting or checking his phone. And he's looking down, going through a dangerous part of the road that everybody in that neighborhood has said. You go down this decline, and there's crashes that happen, and it's very dangerous. I think he's in a spot that's 45. He's already late, that we know, to this event. He's probably going 65 or 75. He's coming downhill, and he's looking at his phone, texting the director or somebody on the shoot that he's going to be a little bit late, or he's checking the GPS on the phone, and he swerves off the road into the median, and he's discombobulated and slams into a tree at 75 miles an hour and rolls his car. That's what I think happened. And thankfully, nobody is driving in the two lanes of traffic that he drives into. And thankfully, nobody is walking or jogging or biking on the side of the road that he rolls over, because he would have killed them. Do I think it's a non-story because it's none of my business? That's laughable. It's laughable. He's one of the most famous people on earth. His golfing career is likely over. He nearly killed himself in a wreck. Of course it's a story. I'm not pinning this on the authorities in some type of cover-up. I'm not. Because I know how difficult that job is. My father-in-law has been law enforcement for his entire life, has risen through the ranks to a chief of police position. I've talked to him oftentimes about what goes into law enforcement. In fact, I talked to him about this exact incident and how it was executed by the LA Sheriff's Office. And he gave me a lot of good detail and background on how protocol usually goes. Because there is no injury to somebody else, because there is no damage to anybody else's property in an instance like this, they do not have to go to the phone records. They do not have to do much more deep dive than asking Tiger what happens of what he remembers, because the investigation is for no other reason than to just piece together an incident that didn't end up leading to anything besides a guy crashing his car into the side of a tree in you know, a field. That they didn't sense any impairment at the scene is fine. If they didn't, they didn't have to give him any type of tests. I'm not here to throw shade at the sheriff's office of not doing their job at all. I think that when it comes to them having to ask the privacy of the Tiger Woods camp whether they can release their details and findings, I found that peculiar, and we talked about that last week on the show. I found that peculiar because it is rare where you now have law enforcement asking permission of the family to release details of something like this. But I think, especially in LA, there might be a heightened sensitivity around law enforcement after the Vanessa Bryant situation. Vanessa has gone after the people that have seemingly taken advantage of her husband's passing and the crash site and information, sensitive information about that. So it is distinctly possible, especially in the LA area, that they're being uber careful with information about celebrities, car crashes, helicopter crashes, incidents, etc. Which, again, I understand. But if Tiger Woods has been behind the wheel of a car twice when he's been under a clouded fog of medication and crashed, or fallen asleep on the side of the road, and now been speeding upwards of 87 miles an hour in a 45, speeding across two lanes of oncoming traffic and nearly killing himself, and may have been texting or distracted driving during it, I do think that should be known. Because Tiger is a danger behind the wheel of a car. Few people have one of those incidents. He's got three of them. And maybe Tiger wants to control this narrative. Maybe he doesn't remember what happened. But I think it's very significant that after two major traffic incidents, one, a crash where his whole life spilled out, two, the most embarrassing episode of his life where he's falling asleep on the side of the road, if he's also doing 87 through a 45 while texting or looking at his phone, putting people in harm's way again, I think that's very significant. And I think it's highly unlikely on my BS meter that one of the greatest athletes of all time, who was as coordinated as anybody has ever been through the utmost pressurized situations, the man has had no pulse basically when he has putted on the 17th hole or the 18th hole at Augusta. This man has always been the most composed man ever during pressure, happens to hit the wrong pedal when he's in the middle of a car crash. I don't know how long anybody's been driving, but he's been driving for about 25 years now. He's a little older than I am. We both got our licenses, I'm guessing, in the mid to late 90s. He's been doing this for 25 years. He happens to hit the accelerator instead of the brake. And he's completely lucid and there and not distracted at all. One of the greatest athletes ever, one of the most coordinated people ever, in the middle of a crash, just happens to hit the wrong pedal. That doesn't smell right. Doesn't smell right. And either way, even if it is true, even if that's exactly what happened, and he was not texting, and he was not under the influence, etc., it's still a story because the guy has now three different times put everybody around him on the road in peril. And that guy happens to be one of the greatest, most notable athletes and people ever to live. That's notable. Sorry. Sorry if you don't want that information out. It's just the truth. He's a liability on the road to everybody around him. That much is obvious. When we come back here on the show, we are stunned to a news. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
UNCBS, you're looking good. It's the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
This weekend on CBS, the big events continue as the best golfers of the world head to Augusta National in hopes of winning the coveted green jacket. It's a tradition unlike any other. The Masters coverage begins Saturday, 3 Eastern, and continues Sunday, 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific, only on CBS.
CBS Spectacular, yeah!
Glad you're with us on this fine Thursday. We'll talk NFL draft at the top of the hour, and then The Miz is going to join us 20 minutes past next hour, so a little under an hour from now. The Miz on WrestleMania is going to drop on by. That should be very, very fun. Now, earlier in the show, we did this amazing story. Mraz dug this thing up, where 101 years ago, spring training 1919, Babe Ruth's roommate on the Yankees, Ping Bodie, was known as such an impressive eater that at spring training, the Jacksonville City of Commerce and the New York Yankees, looking for attention, brought an ostrich from the Jacksonville Zoo. Yes, it always comes back to the DA Show. From the Jacksonville Zoo, that was once upon a time housing Michael Jackson's elephant, to eat plates of spaghetti against Ping Bodie. Now, Ping Bodie was one of the first Italian-Americans to play in Major League Baseball. His real name was nothing like Ping Bodie, actually. His real name was Francisco Pisola. You know, Ping Bodie. So they had heard about this ostrich that was eating everything. They knew that Ping Bodie ate everything and said, let's pit the two against one another. Mraz, this is one of the great DA Show stories ever. Now, I've actually got the newspaper account. This is serious. This is the newspaper account from writer W.O. McGeehan. And the headline is, Ping Bodie, winner of eating contest, makes champion ostrich quit. San Francisco boy gets new honors. So Ping Bodhi, his new honor being the heavyweight eating champion of the world. So I've got this newspaper account, and I felt like, why don't I read this newspaper account so we hear in W.O. McGeehan's voice exactly what it sounded like to be there, because this is our poll question today. Do you think you could at least compete with an ostrich in a competitive eating situation? What do you think?
I think this is a great idea, and if there was ever a moment in time made for the DA show, it is digging up a 1919 eating contest account.
Okay, so, Botch, back at the studio, let's start the music. The match was promoted by the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce, which has been advertising Percy as the world's greatest eater. Colonel T.L. Houghton, who foots the bills for Bodhi, laughed at these pretensions of the challenge followed. Bodhi, whose real name is Francisco Pisola, as the challenged party, chose spaghetti to a finish. The bout was not advertised as it was feared that state or federal authorities might intervene in view of the brutality in the terms of the match. Now, I don't know what to believe here, Mraz. Is it possible that state and federal authorities would have intervened because of the brutality of killing an ostrich with spaghetti?
What? I mean, I guess at that point, I don't know if there was the World Wildlife Foundation or Federation, so maybe they would. The FBI comes in, swoops in, takes the ostrich home.
That noted Flatbush trencherman, Wilbert Robinson, consented to second the ostrich. Bodhi was seconded by Truck Hanna, a consistent but not very scientific eater. As the combatants struggled with the platters, the cheering of the spectators shook the pavilion. There were times when it was all that the police could do to keep the crowd from tearing through the ropes into the ring. Are we to believe that fans were trying to tear through the ropes to get into the ring with an ostrich and Ping Bodhi?
And are we to believe there was actually a ring and not just some kind of table outside the Yankee clubhouse?
Bodhi appeared on the platform first and bowed gracefully to the plaudits showered on him. The ostrich was led in by Wilbert Robinson a few minutes later, and the members of the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce gave him a rousing recognition. Bodhi scowled defiantly at his antagonist, while the ostrich sharpened his beak on the canvas and playfully poked his second in the overhanging abdomen. It was agreed that both eaters would break clean from the platters. The gong rang at 2 minutes after nine. So you're telling me at 9:02, an ostrich and Ping Bodhi, I'm guessing in the morning, were eating plates of spaghetti and that the ostrich sharpened his beak on the canvas?
It's all in the details. It's all in the details.
Unless this is 9:02 p.m., in which the ostrich is up really late. Round one. Both platters were cleared as the bell rang. Bodhi was a trite concerned by the sprig of spaghetti that eluded his fork. But he grasped it with his hands and flung the fork out of the ring. As we learned earlier, he started eating with only his hands, throwing the fork into the crowd. Round two. In this period, it was seen that Bodhi had his plate clean, while Percy was still fumbling. Experts began to figure that Percy had met his equal at last. Members of the Chamber of Commerce, who had wagered heavily on the contest, began to look for a chance to hedge. Are you telling me there were so many bettors on this that after round two, those that had bet on the ostrich started betting against the ostrich to hedge their bets?
In the days before FanDuel, we were hedging between a Yankee and an ostrich.
Round three, the ostrich came back strong in this round and swallowed his second's watch. And that's for the third platter. But the smile of confidence remained upon Bodhi's face. Member of the Yankees team shouted, "Stay with him, Ping!" Ping cast a defiant glance at the ostrich as he went into his corner. Again, in round three, W.O. McGeehan is reporting that the ostrich ate his corner man's stopwatch. Come on. Come on. Round fall. The ostrich began to show signs of punishment of this round. Percy's sides had begun to swell visibly, while Bodhi showed not a symptom of corpulence. So now, round four, after four plates of spaghetti, Percy the ostrich's sides are swelling.
It's great detail. Now, this is a journalist.
Round five. The ostrich came out a bit weary. Bodhi's golden smile widened, and he refused the napkin proffered by his salacious second. Okay, so he said no to the napkin. Round six. Percy was tiring visibly. Many of the spectators ringside started for the door for humanitarian reasons. They did not want to see the finish. So it's gotten so ugly that people are turning away from the ostrich nearly dying from the spaghetti. Is that what's happening? They started to the door for humanitarian reasons. Round seven. Even strong men begin to edge back from the ring. They began to fear that in a few more rounds, Percy would explode. Again, they're worried that the ostrich is going to actually explode. Round eight. In this round, it was plain, even to the layman, that Bodhi was merely toying with his food while Percy the ostrich was dying on his feet. Round nine, the start of the round, even hardened eaters were shouting to Wilbert Robinson to throw up the sponge. Do you want your bird killed, they demanded. Not while he's on his feet, replied Robinson. Brutality. So now you've got the entire crowd saying you're killing your ostrich, throw in the towel, and he won't?
By the way, now it's killing him. Round three, when he ate the pocket watch, nobody was concerned.
Here's the headline of the final paragraph. Ping going strong, ostrich goes out. Round 10, the ostrich staggered out of his corner with his beak sagging. It was plain that he had little further to go. Bodhi grinned. Round 11, the ostrich barely waddled from his corner. Again, they're now after 10 platters of spaghetti. The ostrich barely waddled from his corner. Percy's eyes were bloodshot, and his sides were heaving as he towed his platter. He was a badly beaten ostrich. Bodhi was almost finished with his platter when Percy dropped to his knees. The timekeeper began to count. Bodhi ferociously downed the last morsel and stepped back to survey his fallen antagonist. As the timekeeper muttered, the final 10, the ostrich sank back to rise no more. W.O. McGee. So, the report is that the ostrich fell to his knees and slammed his beak into the final platter of spaghetti as Bodhi, Ping Bodhi, kept eating spaghetti. How much of this could be true?
I'm going to say all of it was over-exaggerating a thing in 1919. I believe it. I believe the ostrich passed out and there was nobody to really care enough for the ostrich. I'm in on the story being true.
I'm not buying this. I mean, I believe that it happened where an ostrich was battling Ping Bodhi. But back in those days, you know, it was like you couldn't even trust newspaper reports of like Babe Ruth's exploits on the baseball diamond because everything was with a flourish. Everything was exaggerated. So some of this happened. I don't think he ate a stopwatch in the middle of this thing. And I don't think that he fell to his knees and his beak cartoonishly fell into the final pile of spaghetti as people ran for the exit saying, you're killing that ostrich. If he's on his feet, he's going. He's a champion.
That is, by the way, the best impersonation you have ever done on the show.
Is that right?
Old-timey newspaper reporter, that is your go-to. And I also think, with all due respect to the directors we've had on, I don't need an Al Davis 30 for 30.
No.
Where is the 30 for 30 on an ostrich eating spaghetti versus a New York Yankee? Yep. Why is this a throwaway piece on MLB.com 102 years later?
I don't know. How do we not know about this story 101 years later? How is this not one of the most notable baseball stories ever? Like, this should be like Babe Ruth predicting his home run, pointing to the stands at Wrigley in the 32 World Series. This should be the Pine Tar incident. This should be one of the most famous moments in baseball history, the day a New York Yankee beat an ostrich in a spaghetti eating contest.
We're worried about Tyson fighting a shark. A Yankee out-ate an ostrich.
I also think that this could be a good bit for the summer when things are getting kind of lulled. I think we just take old-timey newspaper sports reports of like the 1920s and we read them with that music behind it. That's the segment.
So true. And I'm also upset that we only found out about this story now, because had we found out about this story last April, my goodness, Dia, we could have done the full week on this.
Yeah, that's a week or maybe even a month of Ping Bodhi versus the ostrich. We have on ostrich keepers. We have on wildlife experts. We have on competitive eaters. We have on people that make spaghetti. We have on, you know, food historians. What was spaghetti and sauce like back in the 19-teens? I mean, are there meatballs in the 1919s? Is it a thinner spaghetti sauce like a Chef Boyardee? Is it a thicker tomato gravy? I'd like to know all these things. What are they feeding Ping Bodhi and this ostrich?
Yeah, and also today you could get 50 different cuts of pasta. Back then, was it simply a spaghetti and maybe a ziti, and that's about it? I don't know. Carpaccioli, did that exist? Who knows?
And I'd love the idea of Andrew Bogish, like his great-great-grandfather, doing updates on WCBS radio at that point in time, doing the next morning's updates about Ping Bodhi defeating the ostrich in the spaghetti-eating contest.
That's how the legacy began. That's how we made our name in this industry, was being ringside for that battle.
Ping does it again. Your sports update on 880 WNYC.
Brought to you by NHTSA. Don't forget, trains can't stop.
Especially in this era. They're all coal locomotives. Don't tie up your dame and put them on that train tracks like one of those evildoers do. And what's the deal with Hoover? Can he get us out of this mess?
How old was John Sterling in 1919? Could he have called that fight?
It's the last time Fordham won an NCAA tournament game.
And you know, Hubert, Ping Bodhi just had defeated the ostrich yesterday in that spaghetti eating contest, the 2-2 to Ping.
Call 1-800-8-MILLION. What does call mean?
What would Sterling's Ping home run call be today?
All right, Mr. Bogish has our headlines. What do we got here, Bogues?
They are playing golf at Augusta. The 85th Masters is officially underway. Only a handful of golfers are on the course right now. It gets busier, obviously, as the day progresses. Dustin Johnson, who won this event just 6 months ago, tees off in a little less than 2 hours. Jordan Spieth, who won last week in Texas, among those playing this afternoon. In the NBA last night, another Celtic victory.
7 on the shot clock. Smart again. Deep three, left side. Got it! Of course he did. Of course he did.
He can't shoot. He can't guard. But he knocked down the huge one.
You can't tell if Sid Maxwell's being mean at the end there. He can't guard. He can't shoot. But he hit that shot. He and Sean Grandy on Celtics Radio. Marcus Smart scored 14 of his 17 in the fourth quarter to close out the Knicks 101-99. Boston has won 3 of 4 to take sole possession of 7th in the East. The Suns fought off the Jazz 117-113 in OT. The Nuggets beat the Spurs 106-96. The Mavs losing in Houston 102-93. And the Nets dumped the Pelicans 139-111. Kevin Durant 17 points in 19 minutes after missing 23 with that hamstring injury. Baseball last night, the Orioles snapping a 12-game losing streak at Yankee Stadium 4-3-11. And the Rockies beat the Diamondbacks 8-0. From the NHL, the Wild snapped Colorado's 15-game point streak 8-3. The French Open delayed a week, now starting May 30th. Because of the COVID situation in France, and you guys tell me if there's time for Stunned.
Yeah, let it whirl.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
Earlier this week, we showed our toughness breaking down mouse traps and whether or not we could handle running one of them. I don't think there's a glue trap big enough for this bad boy. Viral video of a 6-foot monitor lizard invading a 7-Eleven in Thailand. At first, it looks like it's going into a cooler to get a drink. Then it scales some shelves, knocking things to the floor, eventually setting up shop on the top shelf. I don't know if King Kong showed up, so I don't know how they got rid of this monster, but apparently monitor lizards are not dangerous to adults. They only eat small things like eggs and dead things. So if you were in the 7-Eleven, you were theoretically safe, but this is about as scary as it gets with this thing just running wild inside this convenience store.
When I saw the screenshot, I thought it was a doll. I thought from the headline it was a doll that was made to look real because it's so enormous. It's taking up an entire aisle of snacks from the top shelf. Then I watched the video. This is terrifying. This is an enormous lizard that is scaling up an entire, like, 5 to 6 row shelf unit to get to the top and to hang out there over the icy machine right next to the beer cooler. Imagine walking into a 7-Eleven and seeing this in Thailand. This is terrifying, Mraz. Terrifying.
Well, I would walk 1 foot in the store, realize I don't need a bag of Doritos and a double Big Gulp that badly, and I would get the heck out. I don't care if we don't know that it doesn't eat big people and only eats little things. What is this store doing? You have to close up shop, all patrons out. This is an emergency. This place needs to be evacuated. You can't trust this monster.
How do you remove that monitor lizard? It is on a top shelf, 5 feet up, and it's got to weigh 100 pounds. It has to. And it scaled that shelf so easily. It just climbed right up it on the face of the shelf. It's got amazing climbing apparatuses on the bottom of its feet, I guess, with the claws and the gripping. I mean, this, it really looks like a dinosaur. A dinosaur walked into a 7-Eleven and is hanging out on top of the icy machine in Thailand. This is horrifying.
It killed Newman and then went right into the 7-Eleven. That's exactly what happened. And by the way, you don't get rid of it. You end up realizing your life savings in opening a 7-Eleven is over. You close the door and it's that thing's home now.
Yeah, that thing now sells lotto tickets. It is horrifying. When we come back here on the DA Show, Shaq with an amazing gesture. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
DA, CBS Sports Radio has gone full-blown Real Housewives. There's so much dissent on the DA Show, and do you have Mraz's back or what?
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We actually have been lacking on the dissent recently. That's probably a good thing. We've had a good couple of weeks here of everybody being on the same page, but I'm sure it'll disintegrate here shortly. This is such a cool story. Shaq goes into Zales, the jewelers, the other day. Earlier this week, he's looking for some hoop earrings. And while he's in there, there's a guy who is asking about the balance that he still has due on a ring that he had purchased there. Shaq overhears him and convinced the guy to let him pay off the rest of the ring. His good deed captured on video and aired the other night on the NBA on TNT. And it's a pretty cool thing that Shaq did. It's not like TNT's cameras were there. It was just caught by somebody who was... It wasn't like Shaq was doing this for the attention. Shaq was just there, and there was somebody that was either filming it, like somebody else that was in the store, on a camera, on a phone. And Shaq just did this because he overheard this guy saying, you know, how much do I owe? And might have thought that the guy needed the help. And it's the type of things that you wish you would do or you think you would do if you had the money. You know, I'm sure Shaq, he must have made $200 million over the course of his playing career. And now, how many things does he endorse? Plus working for TNT. So he might make still $25 million a year. Who knows? And you just wish, you know, if the good man upstairs ever gave me a chance to make $25 million a year, right? We would all say this. If I ever made that much money, like I see these billionaire owners of teams or these millionaire athletes,
I would be a good guy. I would pay for people's rings. I would pick up the tab on this. I would spend money on this for other people. I would be a good guy. And then a guy like Shaq actually is that guy. You know, it's funny. Shaq is a very complicated person. Shaq has not always been a happy-go-lucky great guy. He's not just a court jester. You know, when he was a player in the NBA, Shaq was volatile and he was divisive and he resented hard coaching and resented Kobe's, you know, tough love and wanted to be traded and wanted out and wanted to be the man and had a big ego and had some immature moments. But I think in retirement, Shaq has proven to be a pretty decent guy. And throughout the years off of the basketball court, he's certainly been a very decent guy. You get that story a lot about Shaq, so that's very cool. When we come back, Pete Prisco on the NFL Draft.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.